Off the Ball Rugby.
Pretty incredible. Only Johnny Sexton really could do this. So look, I know he was a de facto coach anyway. You know, I would imagine there's a few coaches out there whose noses are probably out of joint by this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You're listening to OTB's Breakfast Bite. Yeah!
Graham Hunter, good morning to you.
Good morning, Terry Kelly and I are glad that the squabbling is over. It's good to be into Champions League after that awful bickering in the studio, lads.
Well, you know, it's real life. Why would we not show the reality
just,
of our lives?
Just be yourselves.
Exactly.
Just be yourselves.
Annoying clowns. Come here.
Whoa. whoa.
At least I'm self-aware, you know. Look, the urge to rank things. One of the great semi-finals last night. I'm sure that there are people out there going, oh, the defending was terrible, blah, blah, blah. But actually, I think we watch football to see goals, to see comebacks, and this had everything.
I couldn't agree more. Were it my club, if that was Aberdeen that had gone out like that, I'd be devastated. If I was an Inter fan, then you'd think you were invincible. The stories tumble over one another because the guy, the central defender, mid-30s already, cancer survivor, who gets them back in a tie with 2 minutes left, a serve, he scores a brilliant goal. His weak foot, it shouldn't happen, but it did. We've seen further confirmation of the exceptional nature of Lamine Yamal, who strode tall throughout last night despite Inter slapping Barcelona about in the first half. Lamine was like, once again, I'm the banner carrier. This isn't happening on my watch. We saw Sommer just do divine things in goals. The atmosphere was brilliant for my taste. Although there's a lot of bitching and moaning in Spain about the refereeing, I thought the referee was 9 out of 10 in terms of excellence. 15 goals across the two ties, lads. 12 different scorers. Eric Garcia, just like Acerbi, shouldn't really be doing that. That volleyed goal, which was so exceptional to get one back in the tie for Barcelona. Everywhere you looked, great goals, great stories. And the only bit that I'll pick on, Ger, is that analytically, even you can still be full of joy. You can still say that was thrilling. It's somewhere up the best ties that I've ever been involved in on a working basis, covering it, chronicling it. Gerard Martin, the young left back who's deputising for Balde, had such an odd time because huge mistakes in the first leg, hauled off at halftime in Barcelona, trusted again 6 days later, has an absolutely awful first half, gives the ball away consistently, gives the ball away as in the build-up to the penalty that Inter scored. It's the obvious decision. He and Olmo have to come off at halftime. Olmo robbed for the first goal, really badly robbed. He hadn't touched the ball in 20 minutes. His first touch of the ball, Olmo, is to have the ball robbed away and Inter scores. Gerard Martin and Olmo off. It's self-evident. And then Gerard Martin comes out, makes two assists, makes another brilliant assist that there's no describing how Eric Garcia didn't fill the net and somehow managed to score. That was potentially his redemption. Almost scores off one of Gerard Martin's assists. But by the end, Gerard Martin is hugely, hugely at fault for Inter's 3-3 goal. And therefore, Gerard Martin, poor kid, tears at the end. He was one of the players who's really genuinely weeping. He was leaking from the eyes. What an odd two games Gerard Martin had against Inter.
What's the reaction in Spain been, Graham?
Yeah, the front pages of the papers say, you know, Thierry Oas has got, there were only 2 minutes too long in the tie because Barca, with 2 minutes left of added time, were winning 3-2 after Rafinha had a left foot shot and then a right foot goal, one after the other, bang, bang. Epic goodbye is the Mundo Deportivo headline. There's a general front page reaction to exactly the way Gerard introduced this comment. It's we've seen something cruel and beautiful and epic and hard to understand, and a match that lifts the tournament up. It is, however you rank it, whatever your particular taste is, it's up there in the all-time great European Cup Champions League ties, but, you know, by a distance. Mm. Then inside, there are quotes. Flick takes a little nibble at the referee in the post-match press conference and simply says something that doesn't really befit him, because he's been a breath of fresh air to European football this season, Flick, with his evangelical language about joy and go out and enjoy yourselves, the team, and this performance gave me joy and beautiful football. These are phrases that he uses over again, and he takes a nibble at Marcin at the poll by saying every 50-50 decision went their way. And Eric Garcia went, I've been here 3 times and we know what it's like under this referee. All he did was let things be a little bit more robust. I think he and VAR got it right that it was a penalty by Kubarsky. It's something of a shame if you think about the standards that you two are younger than me, but we all grew up with. A tackle like that probably is let go in the past, but the rules were applied, and well, I think it is a penalty. Arsene Wenger has been quoted in the Spanish papers as saying, I'm deadly opposed to those types of tackles being penalties. Frankly, Arsene Wenger is transforming from a once great manager into an old git. It wasn't a penalty committed on Lamine. It was outside the box, correctly done again. So the tone in Spain is about heroism that didn't quite make it, beauty of football, and some nibbles about the referee, which I think are false. And nobody's put a time clock on it, but I will for you. When the final whistle went last night in San Siro, it was 112 hours and 40 minutes until Barca kick off in the Clásico. Clásico, where they're 4 points ahead in La Liga, but they come into that Clásico genuinely wounded, morale, physicality, stamina, and a Clásico where if they lose, it's a 1 point gap with 3 games remaining, and they'll be judged to be in a mini crisis. It's ultra dramatic over here.
Roy O'Connor of the Irish Independent with us. I think you agree with that, right?
Pardon?
You agree with that. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and I think there was a bit of a hint of, it's all, what do you call it? Hindsight. It's all hindsight. Like, people were saying this on Thursday Wednesday when word filtered out about it. It was a bad call. And it was smacked of kind of arrogance and also sentimentality and not picking your best team for the biggest game of your season so far. So it's it was a mistake, and they won't admit it. But I think penny for their thoughts. They had their annual awards dinner last night, Leinster.
Oh, oof, great timing.
So I'd say that was
Margie Snyman was player of the year.
Player of the year. Yeah. Jordy may have been up on stage at one stage.
Sam Prendergast, young player of the year.
Young player of the year. So I'd say it wasn't the most joyous night of their lives. Not a lot to celebrate, even though there's still a bit of season to go. And I'd say, even amongst the tables of dignitaries or guests or whatever, it was all introspection and what went wrong and the succession of bad decisions from that moment, really. Like, they got the selection wrong, but it wasn't the only thing they got wrong. I do think it was a game changer. I think it was the losing of the... They could have won it without him, but not putting him there didn't give themselves the best chance of winning it.
We can come back to the decision not to start him, like, because we obviously heard from Neil Aber about what had gone into it and the rationale and their pre-decision making, that obviously it wasn't something they thought about, maybe thought about too much. But the defence did break. Mm. And that bit is the most shocking, I think. Like, irrespective of it, so it's essentially an Ireland backline.
Yep.
That is conceding all those tries. And it's the Ireland pack of forwards enhanced with RG Snyman that is conceding all those tries in a way that we haven't seen an Irish team or Leinster concede since, I'm trying to think back to, like, is it Argentina in 3 World Cups ago?
That's a good question. And New Zealand already shredded them in the first test in Eden Park. But it can happen against New Zealand. But to turn up the system broke. Because Northampton brought a plan. And Andy Dunn's been in here, I've listened to him a few times, talking about how you beat the blitz. And Northampton came with a really good plan, executed really, really well. They didn't engage those wide defenders. They box-kicked on the edge when they went to the edge. They split the defence in two, which makes it impossible to attack with the line speed that Jack Nienaber wants. But the other part, like, there's a couple of different factors to defence. We all focus on the line speed. But he talks a lot about making SH1T of the breakdown. And like Northampton got lightning quick ball all day. So the Leinster ruck didn't work. And also their spacing around the ruck, which is a basic thing, which really any defensive system, you would never plan to have so much space between Andrew Porter and Orgie Snyman for that Henry Pollock try, for example, and have three of your forwards, so it was two forwards in Gibson Park, on the blind side, marking no one in 5 metres of space. So that's 1-on-1. That's not bringing in the best defence coach in the world. And it comes back to, I think, their energy and their mindset. And I wrote a piece on for Saturday's paper hailing how he turned them into mentality monsters, which dated very quickly. Wasn't my finest piece of work. And I just couldn't... There was something off about their energy from minute one. Maybe, like, they seemed to be... Leo Cullen talked about being spooked. They're kind of jittery. The enormity of it. But I thought that would come into the factor in the final, not in the semi-final, when they were expected to win, when they'd been rampaging through the knockouts. So there's a mental thing. There's an energy thing. Their two worst performances have come back-to-back against the Scarlets and here. So what's happened in the last 2 weeks that, having gone to South Africa and done so well, having nilled two teams successively, something's gone awry in training in the last 2 weeks. Their preparation has clearly been off, whether that's the coaches or the players. And their energy on the day, you could see it in the stands. And you mentioned all the internationals. Well, their best player was Tommy O'Brien, who's never played for Ireland and had never been tainted by the stuff that had gone before. So it's one of the most fascinating but also damaging defeats of a litany of defeats that they've had. But like, it's, there's so many strands to pull at it. But like, I do think their energy and their mindset was way off where they needed to be for a big game.
To listen to this morning's full Off The Ball breakfast, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.